and beautiful.
She was a knockout. She was a stunner.
A steamy playboy model wannabe.
Looking for a golden girl.
And when she arrived on the dance floor, party time.
She actually kind of glowed in the dark.
But this party ended a little early.
He pulled out a photocopy of her earring, and I knew it was her.
A brutal murder that left her boyfriend devastated and first on the list of people police wanted to interview.
There's history of domestic violence. He hit her, she hit him.
Case closed? Not after investigators find a secretly recorded video, her last appearance before the cameras.
When we saw it, we go, wow, it was her.
Was a model's date with death caught on tape?
We do have a deranged, sadistic killer out there.
Death of a golden girl.
New Year's 2010 was arriving on a shivery night by Miami standards. But temps in the low 60s weren't enough to chill the South Beach scenesters. And there in the throng, diving into the sizzle, was a couple from Michigan, Paula Sladuski and Kevin Klemm, down from Detroit for an impulse long holiday weekend.
Kevin, how did the idea of let's go down to South Beach for New Year's come together?
Paula. That was my baby. She didn't skip on herself, and she liked to live the good life, you know, and going down to South Beach was like, that was it.
A down and back. Hit the clubs, do some shots. Hello 2010.
It was great. Like, we had it all figured out. We're going to go down to South Beach, celebrate the New Year's, come back on Monday.
But come Monday, the live-in boyfriend-girlfriend pair were not on a plane to Detroit. Rather, Kevin Klemm was a very worried guy, meandering down palm tree-lined boulevards in a city he didn't know, looking for his girlfriend, Paula. She was missing. Paula, the aspiring leggy model with blonde hair down to there, had absolutely vanished. Looking back, maybe if Lady Gaga hadn't been booked at the Fontainebleau Hotel for New Year's Eve, Paula wouldn't have insisted on that last-minute trip to Miami and later gotten separated. But Paula really wanted to see Gaga's midnight show. And once down in Miami, Kevin scored scalper's tickets for $700 each. Pricey, but whatever baby wants.
This is the hottest ticket in town, all the celebrities. Oh, she heard the celebrities are going to be there, and she didn't want anything to do with anything else. She had to go to Lady Gaga.
Their attendance at the show was even documented by the guy behind them who took iPhone vids of them dancing. Men tended to do that when they saw Paula all clubbed out. 2010, at that moment, and for not much longer, was starting off for Paula Sladuski right in the sweet spot she loved so well.
She likes celebrities and the velvet rope and all that
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
The VIP tables.
Absolutely. That was her style. She was a beautiful girl. I mean, you take one look at her. She didn't take a bad picture.
And she had a lot of them. Pictures, headshots, glamour stuff. At 26 years old, she'd come to know cameras very well. She was a model represented by a national agency. And she'd made the usual rounds. Local commercials, pretty girl at the Detroit car show kind of stints. Nothing really big until Hef said, maybe.
Looking for a golden girl.
Paula tried out for a national Playboy Playmate search. Think an American Idol-style cattle call with skimpier clothing. Paula made it onto the 2003 video, Playboy's 50th anniversary Ultimate Playmate search. She never got to be Miss November. She didn't make the cut. Still, her sister, Kelly Ferris, remembers Paula being happy she tried it.
There was like 500 women and only 50 got to make it on this anniversary type video. So she was proud of that.
But it just never quite broke for her, did it?
No.
But she talked to Kevin about revving up her modeling dreams or fantasies one last time as soon as this Miami trip was over. Saturday, January 2nd, 2010 was still a vacation day for Paula and her boyfriend. They splurged and moved hotels to a place on the beach. There on the Art Deco Strip, they befriended a waiter and asked him, what's up?
And he said, well, you know, I'm going to be at Space. You should go to Space.
Space to the locals, club space to out-of-towners, Miami's hottest after-hours club. It's only open one marathon night a week from Saturday at 11 p.m. till Sunday afternoon. So that night, Kevin says, they had a romantic dinner on South Beach where Paula bought this neon blue dress. They slept for a bit, then woke up and got dressed. Paula did her customary one-hour makeup thing, and at 5:30 a.m., Paula and Kevin cabbed it to Club Space. Lady Gaga, now Club Space. Paula, in her 6-inch heels, sheer blue dress, and waist-length hair, was a head-turner even to an end-of-shift bartender like Raymond Diaz, who sees lots of Miami hotties.
She actually kind of glowed in the dark. She was so blonde and really tan. She had beautiful, I think, blue eyes. Her dress was like a neon blue or green.
Raymond, we're talking about Miami. Girls like that are a dime a dozen, right?
She stood out, you know, tan, beautiful model. I assume she was a model or on television or something.
Paula and Kevin had been dating and living together for a couple of years. And he knew from painful experience what impact his girlfriend would have in a cavernous dance space jammed with single men powered by alcohol. Paula Sladusky was boom shakalaka.
She seems to be the kind of girl who would walk in a room and just take the oxygen right out of it.
Yeah, for sure. True. She was a knockout. She was a stunner.
Paula danced, flashing her new mini as the fins began circling her. Kevin knew the drill. Run interference on the men salivating for her as best he could. But these guys were making heavy moves on his woman, one in particular.
And I turn around for a second. He's on her, you know. He's got his hand around her waist. He's crotch right up against her. And he's leaning down, kissing. And she's looking over at me, like, kind of like laughing and like whatever. And I'm like, okay, we got to go.
But Paula, lit up by the attention and the shooter she was downing, had a different idea. She was digging in her stilettos.
And I just grab her around the waist and the forearm. I'm like, come on, baby, it's time to go. Do the boyfriend shuffle with her kind of thing. She's like, wait a minute. I don't want to go. Bam, bouncers are on me. They must have been watching or something, but they were on me instantly. Bam, two guys.
Kevin was being ejected from the club by security. She was staying. She asked him for her credit card, and he gave it to her. Kevin said he wasn't going to reason with her in that haze. So seething, he says he got in a cab, still carrying her cell phone as he always did when they went clubbing, and headed back over the causeway to their hotel room on Miami Beach. As the sun came up that Sunday morning, Kevin Clem crashed without his girlfriend. But if he'd paced about outside that club for only a few more minutes after he was tossed out, he would have seen Paula herself leaving just before 7:30 in the morning. She turned right at the sidewalk and disappeared, as they say, without a trace. Coming up, Kevin wakes up alone but not worried, at least not yet.
Had you and Paula had nights that had ended like that before?
Yes, and she always came home.
This time, it would be different. When Death of a Golden Girl continues. Three days into 2010, after a night of clubbing, Kevin Klim woke up in his Miami Beach hotel room with a throbbing head and minus his girlfriend, Paula Sladusky. It came back to him. Club Space, the bouncers throwing him out at dawn, Paula electing to stay.
Had you and Paula had nights that had ended like that before?
Yes. And she always came home.
So it was no big deal to you at that point?
I'm not happy. You know, it's not the way I want the night to end.
Kevin was starting to worry, but he also knew Paula could be a tough Detroit cookie when she needed to be.
She's a big girl. She knows how to handle herself.
She knows what she's doing. Yeah, she's not naive.
Those growing up pictures of pretty Paula masked a difficult Michigan home life with an absent father and lots of stepdads. When she was 14, she was dating a 29-year-old man. It was her older sister, Kelly, not her mother, who called the authorities on him.
I was very angry and very upset. You know, she's 14, she's still a kid. And my mother still let her date him. And at one point I had to call Child Protective Services.
Calling the watchdogs on your mother, huh?
Yes.
The man was arrested and convicted of having sex with a minor and sentenced to 2 years in prison. He's now on a list of sex offenders. Paula, meanwhile, waited till he was released from prison and started dating him again. By then, she was of the age of consent. Old before her time, but still a dreamy little girl in some ways.
That whole little girl fantasy of being the pinup girl or the
Barbie doll.
Shampoo model or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
She had a lot of Barbies.
Probably has over 500 and been collecting since she was a little girl.
Paula liked Barbie so much, she tried to become her. Tall, thin, with long golden hair. The world of modeling she hoped to enter wasn't taken with her real-life Barbie looks. But several strip clubs, gentlemen's clubs in the greater Detroit area, were. She danced at the Penthouse Club there and saved her tips to pay for college tuition until she dropped out. She seemed to like being the girl on the pole, the men lusting after her.
I think that's why, ultimately, you know, she became a dancer. If she was seeking male attention, you know, love that she didn't get growing up.
So along comes Kevin, new boyfriend, and he has to deal with her being an exotic dancer, a successful one.
We got to that point where she was like, this is it, take it or leave it. And I said, well, I love you that much, I'm going to take it.
The money from stripping was good enough to allow Paula and Kevin to move to Los Angeles, just in time for the housing bubble to knock his budding mortgage and real estate business into the ditch. Paula kept on dancing and paid the bills. For a few months, they moved back and forth between places in Michigan and California. Now, she was gone, and he was a guy alone in a Miami Beach hotel with a desk clerk on the phone asking if he was going to roll over the room for another night. Kevin got himself together and went down to ask the manager for help.
She's like, listen, get yourself together. We need to get this girl's picture out on the TV and out on the airwaves.
Miami Beach police told him he'd have to file his missing persons report with the city of Miami, a different jurisdiction. That's where Club Space was located. But the cops wouldn't take his report till 24 hours had passed. He'd now last seen Paula about 10 hours before.
And I'm freaking out. We're from out of town. We're vacationing. You know, it's not like her to be gone this long.
So what happens the rest of Sunday night?
Hospitals and jails, I'm calling. Hospitals, jails. Space, hospitals, jails.
Kevin even went back to Club Space, which was closed late Sunday night, to ask the homeless in the area if they'd seen Paula earlier that morning. After spreading some money around, he went to a gas station two blocks away.
I'm in the taxi. I get out. I go inside, and I talk to the clerk, and I show him a picture of my girlfriend.
That's Kevin on security camera.
I say, have you seen this girl? And he's like, no, well, I haven't. I've only been here for like an hour or two.
Returning to his hotel room in the sleepless night that followed, he got an idea. Call a private detective. He went online and started calling some numbers. The next morning, Monday now, one of them, a private investigator named Dave Wasser, called Kevin back.
He was desperate. He said, can you help me? You know, and I said, well, why don't you tell me a little bit about it? I did a little pre-interview over the telephone, and then I said, we got to meet at the City of Miami Police Station. I can get you some help.
And you got to say, what do I have here? What's going on, huh?
Yeah, I mean, in the back of my mind, I was wondering, you know, is this guy straight up with me or not?
After filing a missing persons, Kevin returned to the hotel while Wasser, the private eye and a Miami police detective, went to Club Space and talked to the manager and two of the bouncers who'd worked the door that early Sunday morning. The people at the club said Paula left the club alone shortly after Kevin. Club policy, they say, is to remove both parties after a fight. Mike Samuels is the front door manager.
She got to the sidewalk. She went around to the right towards the east.
She's solo.
100% by herself.
While his private detective followed up wafer-thin leads, Kevin decided to call the medical examiner's office.
I gave a very, very accurate description of her. And the medical examiner says, hold on a second. Gets back on the phone and says, we're sending a detective. Heart just sinks.
The detectives asked Kevin, did Paula have any body piercings? Yes, he said, she did.
He pulled out a baggie, a Ziploc baggie. And there was two piercings, two posts. They're all like charcoaled, like all burnt, blackened, you know? And he said, would these be the piercings? And I lean and I look close, I'm like, no.
Detectives then checked out some photos of Paula on Kevin's iPhone. They studied an earring.
He pulled out a photocopy of her earring. And I knew it was her. And that's the worst day of my life.
The earring, Paula's earring, had been found at the scene of a burning dumpster. And inside the dumpster, they found the charred body of a person they thought was a female.
And it turned out to be gruesome beyond belief.
Yeah, I've relived that moment too many times.
Kevin was driven to the police station in North Miami, near where Paula's remains had been found, about 10 miles north of the dance club. They had questions for him, intense ones. How was he going to explain what police were learning about a violent domestic history with his now murdered girlfriend, the woman found in a burning dumpster? And how was he going to explain that lover's quarrel at the club the very night of the murder?
They were having an argument. He grabbed her arm. That's when I called security.
When Dateline continues. Nine o'clock, Sunday night on New Year's weekend, 2010, residents of a neighborhood in North Miami began calling it in. A small dumpster behind a propane gas dealership was on fire. Flames were shooting out. A body, it turned out, had been set on fire.
Could you tell male or female even?
At that point, no. We had nothing else to go by then. It was a human being.
It was Detective Michael Gaudio's responsibility to learn who the victim was and how it was that he or she, they couldn't tell at first, had been thrown away and torched. At the morgue, the ME confirmed everyone's suspicions. It was a woman's charred body. In cop talk, a Jane Doe.
We started contacting other agencies, see if they had anybody missing, checking missing person reports.
The North Miami detective was with the medical examiner's staff when the phone rang. It was Kevin Klim asking if they'd found a young woman, his girlfriend, Paula Sladewski, missing now for 3 days.
He described her to the investigator there at the medical examiner's office, and it kind of fit a general description of what we had.
Dental records would later confirm that it was indeed Paula Sladewski.
Why would a killer or killers dump a body, dispose of it the way that they did?
Well, you're looking at a couple of different aspects. You're doing it for either there's hate involved, anger, or you're trying to cover something up, some type of evidence.
DNA, bodily fluids, skin under fingernails. The woman's murderer might assume all would be rendered just so much unreadable char.
Can you take us inside the head of this killer you're looking for at all?
We have somebody that's very comfortable in their surroundings who felt like they had a lot to lose if this woman was found.
Pretty quickly, the detective had a victim from Michigan with a name and a boyfriend who'd reported her missing. What's more, he was still in South Florida. So what was his story, this Kevin guy? On the one hand, he appeared to be appropriately distraught. He was the one who filed the missing persons report, and he was seen putting up posters around town with her photo on it. On the other hand, he was the boyfriend. And that single fact alone made him a person of interest to the investigators.
In these type of cases, you're always going to talk to somebody who was the last person to see them. They have the most information about what was going on, the final moments of a person's life or what they were doing or where they were with.
In addition to talking to him, you want to strip off his clothes, see if he's got any scratch marks on him.
Of course.
Standard procedure.
Standard procedure.
Take off the clothes, take some pictures, have a seat. We're going to talk to you for a while.
Yeah.
A good while, in fact. And even though Kevin Klim showed no visible marks or scratches from a fight or struggle, detectives still had a lot of questions.
They came to my hotel around noon, and by the time the detective dropped me off back at my hotel, it was 12:30 at night.
Detectives quickly learned the details weren't always pretty. Kevin and Paula's relationship had been rocky at times. Court records in both California and Michigan showed a history of domestic violence arrests between the two. One included Paula's arrest in California for hitting Kevin with a bottle. The case was dropped when Kevin refused to press charges. And in the months prior to the Miami trip, Kevin was arrested twice for assaulting Paula in Michigan. The last time, Paula's nose had been broken.
They've been together off and on. According to him, it's like 2 years. There's a history of domestic violence. That's all come up.
Well, you got to wonder, right?
Well, you have to wonder. Again, this goes back to he's the last person to see her that knows her. So you have to wonder about
What is he not telling us?
Police say the victim's boyfriend is still considered a person of interest.
Sladusky's boyfriend, a man with mugshots from a history of domestic violence.
Kevin's name and background quickly got into the reporting on the lurid murder. The reporters found the court records of domestic violence complaints. That didn't look good for the boyfriend. And neither did the story told by the Lady Gaga concert goer who'd taken iPhone videos of Kevin and Paula. The cell phone photographer, John Williams, went on TV and said he distinctly remembered the man who would turn out to be Kevin as someone acting too aggressively in the crowd.
Now here's this guy who was really obnoxious and pushing through his crowd more so than anyone else I saw there.
And then there was a new lead to the coverage. According to news reports, sometime, it's not clear when, but before her Miami weekend, Paula had allegedly sent a text message to an ex-boyfriend saying, "He's trying to kill me." He was that Kevin.
They've got to find who did this to my baby.
Paula's mother, Patsy Watkins, up in Michigan, was telling anyone who'd listen that she had no use for Kevin Klim.
She was scared. She called her ex-boyfriend. She texted him, "I'm hiding from the beast."
As she arranged for care for her murdered daughter's two dogs, she was preparing to tell detectives in Miami what she had already told the TV cameras. She claimed her daughter was terrified of Kevin Klim.
It's just the threats that echo in the back of my head to destroy her life and she'd never be able to work again.
But bad-mouthing family and maybe bad behavior at a Lady Gaga concert didn't make for the foundation of a homicide case. So detectives came here to the club where she was last seen to get down exactly what that story was about how the two of them had come to be ejected from club space by bouncers. Bartender Raymond Diaz told about seeing the start of the trouble between the pair.
They were having an argument. They're only 2 or 3 feet in front of me. But then he grabbed her arm.
Took hold of her physically.
Took hold of her physically by the arm. And that's when I called security.
The club managers explained the house policy of ejecting both parties when trouble flares. Him, then her. So in the early hours of the case, there was a lot of stuff swirling about Kevin Klim. He came across like a short-fused guy who sometimes got physical.
At the end of that first interview with Kevin, the boyfriend, is he on your suspect list of people of interest?
Yes, he is.
He hasn't talked himself off the list?
No.
At the end of his 12 hours of grilling, Kevin said he felt more like a prime suspect with a star next to his name. Forget about person of interest.
We know you did it. Why'd you do it? We don't think you're a bad guy. Maybe you made a mistake, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm just like, I can't tell you I did something I didn't do.
In the court of public opinion, it was looking as though the boyfriend did it. But it turned out the 26-year-old dancer who so loved the lens had one final scene before the camera, a few seconds of grainy security cam footage. And what investigators saw there made them think that maybe the boyfriend was telling the truth. Coming up, Paula's last date with a killer.
They literally walked off holding hands as if they were a couple.
When Death of a Golden Girl continues. Paula was dead, and the boyfriend, Kevin, realized he was falling behind the curve on where the finger of suspicion pointed.
Do you volunteer the tumultuous histories that's going to be reported in the newspaper stories in the next few days?
Everything. Signed a release, you know, no warrant necessary, waive my Miranda rights. Let's do it because I need you to rule me out immediately so that we can get on to finding who killed her.
The North Miami detectives interviewed him for 12 hours before letting him leave.
So you're waiting to be arrested at that point?
I didn't know. They didn't tell me. They didn't tell me anything. They just said, you know, I hope we don't find out you did it.
Very active at 7:10. There's security up front.
Meanwhile, Dave Wasser, the private detective Kevin had hired the day after Paula went missing, was doing his own legwork.
Do you remember the white gentleman named Kevin Klim?
He videotaped interviews with people who hang around outside the club and handed out flyers. Kevin was just a guy who'd called the detective in the middle of the night. But there was something about the boyfriend that felt right in his gut.
Believe me, everything that this guy went through, he didn't go off the line for one bit. I've been interviewing criminals a long time, and this guy was straight up.
And soon the detective would meet an unlikely supporter of Kevin's, a member of Paula's family, her sister, Kelly Ferris, who, unlike her mother, thought that Kevin was getting a bad rap in the media, Not that he was blameless.
He shouldn't have left her, and he's got to live with that the rest of his life. And he's devastated about that. He's taken that really hard. He wants to kill himself. You know, it's what he talks about all the time.
Do you believe his story?
Yeah.
That he left alone in the cab, came back to the hotel?
Yeah. I had never had a doubt.
Kelly, the sister, paid her own way down to Miami to help police in the investigation.
I just plead with anybody out there that has any information to please come forward.
She'd last seen her sister with Kevin that Christmas at a family get-together, and they seemed happy together. No sign of the behavior that got both of them arrested for domestic violence before.
If they're going at it like cats and dogs, why are they staying together, Kelly?
I don't know. You know, I ask myself that question now. But when they weren't drinking, they got along great.
Kelly said Paula was also taking prescription diet pills to stay in shape for her modeling and dancing careers.
You know, the combination of that, and she just, they kind of got crazy.
Kelly shrugs off her sister's reported broken nose.
From what I've been told, that was an accident.
And that text message from Paula to an old boyfriend saying she feared for her life, that turned out to be less than advertised. It was moldy old, and the shaky source of it was the same boyfriend who was jailed for having sex with a minor when Paula was just 14. Kelly doesn't make apologies for her sister's lifestyle choice, the strip bars, the booze, the pills. But she remembers as well a Paula who loved her Barbies and who caught the bouquet at Kelly's wedding. Now she was reduced to the 11 o'clock news tease, Playboy model in burning dumpster.
Your pretty sister, your kid sister, treated like so much trash.
Yeah, exactly.
Burned in a dumpster of all
things. It's bad enough that she was murdered, but to be burned like that and us not even to be able to bring a body home was just terrible. It's just terrible.
When she got to Miami, she decided to do some searching herself. She turned on her rental car's GPS and punched in her sister's final waypoints, club space and the dumpster.
Imagine you're hoping you're going to come across somebody who's seen something or notice that there's a camera that might have taken a picture. Huh?
Yeah, see if there were cameras, and because there was a club next door and there was a club right across the street. It appeared that there were outside cameras.
Club Space, it turned out, had almost 30 security cameras, but none outside showing the sidewalk. Most were aimed at the bar cash registers to keep the employees honest. But there was one camera that just might have captured something. There was a camera inside, high over the front door entrance. The private detective rewound the tape deck.
And then you have a holy cow moment. There she is, huh?
Well, I was waiting for that to happen. It took us about 3 hours as we were sitting there waiting and watching. And then when we saw it, we go, wow. It was her.
7 seconds of grainy video. The last images of Paula Sladuski. That's her on the right side of the screen. The hair, the dress, the 6-inch heels. It's 7:21 in the morning. And Kevin? Rewinding the tape about 5 minutes, the detective found him too. That's Kevin on the right side of the screen begging bouncers to ask his girlfriend to leave with him.
And they say, well, go talk to her. They leave me, come back, and they say, listen, we talked to her, and she wants to stay, and you got to go. You got to get out of here, man.
At 7:17 in the morning, Kevin is seen exiting the club alone.
It's a decision I'm going to regret the rest of my life. I mean, this is my nightmare. I wake up thinking if only I would have stayed an extra 10, 20 minutes. If only.
Although police still considered Kevin a person of interest, there was persuasive evidence now that he left Paula behind at the club.
It seems to bolster his story and his recollection of the time that he exited.
Everybody we talked to, you know, down there said they did leave by himself and there was no problems.
The head of security at Club Space, Mike Samuel, says he saw both Kevin and later Paula leave alone. But he and others have added an important new observation, something not seen by this blinking security camera up here, a detail that has changed the focus of the murder investigation. The club security chief said he did see Paula walking away with someone once she was on the street, and that person wasn't Kevin Klim.
A light-skinned African-American male with a groomed full beard. Well-built, average height, probably 6 foot.
And you didn't see an abduction. You don't see a rag of chloroform or something, and I'm making it up.
They literally walked off holding hands as if they were a couple. And they were last seen by me and my staff walking away from the club towards the parking lot.
Paula was gone. But who was the man who accompanied her? Coming up, was Paula's killer one of the men who'd been hitting on her at the club?
It wasn't some random guy off the street walks up to her and she just walks off with him.
When Dateline continues. Police now had two big clues in the gruesome murder of Paula Sladusky. A grainy 7-second surveillance video showing the aspiring model leaving the club alone. And an eyewitness, a bouncer at the club, who said he saw Paula walk away hand in hand with a man she met on the street. But Paula's boyfriend, Kevin Clem, said the sometime exotic dancer was too savvy to go off with a stranger.
She knew how to read guys. And listen, I mean, she's been working in clubs in Detroit for 8 years. Okay, Detroit's not a nice area. And she never had any problems.
The boyfriend is convinced it had to be someone who'd been hitting on her in the wee hours at Club Space.
But it wasn't some random guy off the street walks up to her and she just walks off with him.
Kevin had told police that guys were swarming all over Paula at the dance club, and that was a reason he wanted to get her out of there. Was her killer one of the guys hitting on her? But when Kevin and his private investigator, Dave Wasser, went back to the seconds of surveillance cam showing Paula leaving, they came up with another theory. They studied the images and thought the two club employees seen following her out are maybe overly interested in the striking blonde.
Kevin, break it down frame by frame, this little snippet of video of her leaving. What do you see in it?
I see her walking out and, the bouncers eye her. Her go out, I see three or four people fall right behind her. This one guy that's kind of right behind her, could be with her, I don't know. She walks out of frame, and then immediately after the two bouncers, just like immediately, they go out after her. That's what I see.
Police also study the tape and talk to every club employee seen in it. Lead homicide detective Michael Gaudio.
You talk to the door guys, security. Were they also persons of interest to you?
Yes.
Have they talked themselves off your list at this point?
It's such an ongoing, massive investigation with many people. We have to wait till we get all their information back to be able to actually eliminate them from any type of suspicion.
Kevin, getting all conspiracy theory, even wondered if maybe there was a plot among club workers to make a play for the hottie left behind by her boyfriend. Police say that's doubtful.
We haven't uncovered anything that would lead to any type of conspiracy against her that night. So I have to say, that it's viable. But it's not the strongest lead we have.
Here's one of the club employees in that video. He's Mike Samuels, the club's chief of security. He says, look at the tape and you see exactly what really happened. Employees doing their job, showing an ejected patron to the street. No one makes a move for her.
Now, this is the little bit of chamber before you go to the street, and the security camera is up here where we see that video of Paula then leaving the club.
Correct. After Kevin had left.
And you're in that picture.
Correct. I walked back over. I got Paula, and I walked her back out this way, just like we're walking.
That's front door manager Samuels directly behind Paula, escorting her to the door. The two bouncers at the left of the screen were not following Paula, he says. They were following him, their boss, to the front door to make sure there were no further problems on the street.
Mike, when armchair detectives say, look, she's a hot woman, security guys had their eye on her, it's easy to get rid of the boyfriend for a minor violation, and then we've got the girl to ourselves.
That's insane. That's completely ludicrous, especially since the fact that we saw her leave with another gentleman.
What's more, the security chief says every employee was accounted for that night, and no one left with Paula.
The fact that our staff has to clock in and out with a hand reader system with their fingerprints, the fact that nobody leaves staff-wise until 2 or 3 or 4 in the afternoon when we close, it just makes no sense at all.
Samuels emphasizes that the bearded black man Paula was seen walking away with had not been in the club that night. Why not? Because of the club's strict dress code.
He was wearing shorts. Our number one rule, no matter how much money you have, we do not allow you in shorts.
But 2 weeks after Paula's murder, Club Space employees could not believe their eyes. They thought they saw the very man Paula walked off with that morning out on the street. He was back, brazen. Could this be the man everyone was looking for? Mr. walked away with her hand in hand. Coming up, A first look at the man who may have killed Paula.
It does look like someone that I saw that night at the club.
When Death of a Golden Girl continues. A Sunday morning just before 7:30, outside a Miami club where the party night's only halfway through. Taxis, patrons. Paula Sladusky ejected and leaving under the watchful eye of the head security man.
She got to the sidewalk, and then I noticed her and the suspect that were, I guess they're looking for, walking across the street hand in hand towards the north.
And you go over there because there's a big parking lot there.
Correct, there's a big parking lot.
Paula and somebody heading towards the lot behind the strip club across the street. And guess what? 2 weeks after the murder, bouncers at Club Space are certain they've seen the same man again, right outside the front door.
This guy that your door people saw that night, the one approaching her, they believe they saw that same individual again a few weeks later, is that correct?
I believe 2 weeks later on Saturday, they saw an individual fitting that description, walking in front of the club.
Club Space owner Louis Puig says they called the Miami cops, who came and questioned the man.
The police came, they apprehended him, they talked to him, and from my understanding, they let him go because it wasn't the guy.
So he's not on the list?
You know, the guy that she left with might not have been the guy that did the crime.
What happened during those 14 hours? The time between when Paula was last seen outside the club to the hour when her body was found afire in a dumpster? A gap in time police all over Miami were trying to fill. Paula's boyfriend left Miami within 10 days of the murder, under a shadow. Back in Michigan, he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor assault charge in one of those domestic violence cases and was given probation. Charges against him in the other case were dropped. Police in Miami say they still consider him a person of interest. But now they were focusing on the man Paula was seen walking away from the club with. Paula's sister Kelly also left her home in Detroit, but returned to Miami 4 weeks later. She wanted to keep the case alive.
Talk to me about your parents, your family.
It's hard.
She gave TV interviews.
Is this gonna stick on a tree?
Posted flyers with the private investigator Dave Wasser and talked to anyone who might have seen something. A big sister, Nancy Drew.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thanks a lot.
She's very hurt. She's struggling. She's trying to keep this case alive by putting up a reward with her own money.
Kelly put up $15,000 of her own money for a reward. Club Space owners doubled that amount to $30,000, a lubricant, hopefully, for reluctant tipsters. And then, almost 1 month to the day after the murder, just when the case seemed to be stalled out, came a dramatic development. Police announced they had a composite sketch of that man the people had seen outside the club with Paula. The club employees had only glimpsed the man from the back and side. Now there was a new witness, police won't say who got a better look at the man from head on. This is the sketch of that man, produced by a police artist.
The person in the sketch is seen walking towards Paula, as she's standing on the corner. They have a conversation, and then they turn and they walk off together.
That's not to say that he hasn't been inside the club, right?
We have no information to say he was in the club. He may have been, but we don't know for sure.
The sketch was released the same day Kelly was putting up reward posters near the dumpster where her sister's body was found. This was the moment when Kelly got her first look at the man who may have killed her sister.
I'm looking at a murderer.
Kevin Klim thought he actually recognized that face in the sketch and dropped a bombshell.
It does look like someone, that I saw that night at the club.
Inside the club.
It appears to me, it looks very closely like a bouncer at the club.
Like a bouncer?
It looks like one of the bouncers at the club, yes.
Kevin thought it was someone who had checked Paula's ID when they entered the club. On another trip down to Miami, he went back to Club Space on a Sunday morning at the very hour when Paula had disappeared weeks earlier.
This place is a zoo. I mean, there's absolutely no way there's not witnesses out there that saw her leave.
Hoping he wouldn't be recognized, Kevin went undercover at the club. He was looking for the bouncer he thought matched the sketch. 2 hours later, he emerged to the daylight, disappointed.
The entire security crew's gone. Different security altogether. The door, from the door guys to everybody is different in there. They changed out the entire staff pretty much, especially the security crew.
Baloney responded the club owners. They say Kevin is mistaken. The staff is the same, and they have the payroll stubs to prove it.
Security guys are all new, according to Kevin.
Yeah, and it's really sad that he's taking this opportunity, you know, instead of trying to help, you know, to just throw leads out there that are not helping anybody. He's got to sit back and let the police do their work.
Police say none of the bouncers matches the suspect in the sketch. Now, many years later, it is an increasingly cold case in a hot city. Forensic experts have processed some abandoned cars found near the dumpster. If there was a hit there, the authorities haven't disclosed it. So mainly, there is this sketch. The detectives hope that Paula's look-at-me looks will trigger a memory from a witness somewhere that morning in January.
So that signature of her whole life of turning heads might ultimately be the signature of who finds the killer.
Absolutely.
Because you couldn't take your eyes off her.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, the Miami party goes on. Business at the clubs hasn't dipped a bit. If club patrons don't seem to be worried about maybe a hunter in their midst, the police have done their worrying for them.
We do have a deranged, sadistic killer out there that's preying on vulnerable women, and we need to locate this person as soon as possible.
Back in Michigan, Paula's sister Kelly and boyfriend Kevin have waited so many years for a call that so far hasn't come. We have him. 2010 was a very short year for Paula Sladusky, murdered at the age of 26.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.